Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Hare Krishna. Many of you present here today have been enrolled in and participating in the Bhakti Shastra course, is it not? Alright, is this going to be the last time? It's already been adjusted once. Alright, that's it? You're not going to adjust it anymore? Alright. Many of you have participated in the Bhakti Shastra course. Thank you. I think you can all say thank you for having the opportunity. Thank you to the organizers, teachers. What should be the effect? There should be a difference. Before and after. Do we need translation? Is translation going on? So, does everyone know about that? Is everyone aware? Yeah? Anuvad ho raha hai Hindi mein? Very few. Like in lay, very few ke liye hona chahiye. So, Bhakti Shastri. No, Bhakti Shastri actually means the person who's qualified, and but the course is in Bhakti Shastra. The course is to become a Bhakti Shastri. So, what should be the effect of that? We can discuss now. Just like we see advertisements before and after. Before, very fat. Afterwards, a marked difference, isn't it? You see the advertisements before, after. Or before, men, no hair on their head, and afterward, lots of hair on their head. Our process is round the other way. Lots of hair and then shaved. But with one shika at the back. To show that we don't propose to give up everything, but we keep one. We give up all other interests and keep one thing in our life, that is Krishna. The point is that there should be some marked difference, there should be some transformation. Just like with Arjuna, the Bhakti Shastri course, I believe that's centered on Bhagavad Gita, as the main Shastra. Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gita. So, Arjuna, the whole point was that Krishna spoke in such a way that Arjuna's whole understanding and perspective on life and his decision about what to do, it completely changed him. He's Nashto Moha Smritir Labdha Twat Prasadad Maya Achuta Stitosmi Gata Sandeha Karishe Vachanam Tava. This should be the effect of hearing, if we actually hear Bhagavad Gita, as Arjuna did, as Srila Prabhupada notes in the introduction, that one should accept Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna accepted it. So after hearing Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, who in the beginning said, Na yotsya, I won't fight. Na yotsya iti Govinda. Govinda, you're supposed to be the giver of pleasure to the senses. It doesn't please my senses to want to fight, so I've decided not to fight. And you should gratify my senses. This was his materialistic understanding of what it means to be a devotee of Krishna. But at the end, his decision, after hearing Krishna, he said that Nashtomo, my illusion is destroyed. I've regained my remembrance by your mercy, Achyuta, you who are never in Maya like me, Achyuta, Krishna. Now I'm fixed all my doubts have gone, and I will follow your instruction. So this is the transformation, before and after. Arjuna was the same Arjuna, the same battlefield, the same bows and arrows, but he was a different person. Just like before and after. It is 120 kilos and then only come down to 80 kilos, something like that. So it's like if you see the person, you might not recognize them. Before, there's a great transformation. And there's a transformation in what they can do, the way people perceive them, their whole life changes. That's only on the bodily platform. So there should be a transformation. Although externally it may not have appeared that there was that much difference in Arjuna before. He was expected to fight. If he had not fought, that would have been sensational. He did fight, but he fought for completely different reasons than those which he had originally intended to fight. What is that? Kim bhogai. Well, where is the bhoga? Where is the priti? What enjoyment, what love will we get from fighting? He was in a materialistic attitude. So, this should transform us. Of course, we think, well, if anyone comes to devotional service, that in itself is transformational. We agree to chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds a day, to follow four regulated principles. That itself is a transformation. But study and knowledge is required. Srila Prabhupada once said that my only complaint about my disciples is that they don't read my books. And actually, during Srila Prabhupada's presence, it was just the normal thing that every disciple read Prabhupada's books. It was a normal thing. Whereas nowadays, somehow or other, it's a normal thing, it seems, in our movement not to read Prabhupada's books. That's a big change. Our movement's undergone a transformation, but not a good one. It's round the wrong way. So it astonishes me that people who... they're prepared to spend years going to a university and studying so many books so that they can be prepared to be a doctor or an engineer or an accountant or something which is only of temporary value to them. Because when you die, which is inevitable, when this body dies, then the knowledge which you have acquired in the university will be, how much help will it be to us? Absolutely zero. Whatever it may be. So whatever we do for any benefit in this world, it all ultimately comes to zero. And taking to Krishna consciousness means for that which is for our eternal benefit. This is the only real purpose of human life. So it astonishes me that people, they're prepared to invest literally years studying dozens of books and in great detail so that they can get something which is of no ultimate value to them whatsoever. But then when they come to the process which they're supposed to understand is for their eternal benefit, that they don't think it's important to even understand what the process is or to study the books connected with it. So, well, it's good that those of you who have taken to this course have got over that hurdle and have started to study Srila Prabhupada's book seriously. Of course, knowledge in Krishna consciousness and study is not exactly like academic study, where you study, you try and learn and remember everything, and then during the exam you have to get it all out on the piece of paper, and then you pass. And that's it, finished. Then you become what is called a Bhakti Shastri. But study in Krishna consciousness is not actually meant for that. We have exams, that's more or less because we're foolish. Otherwise there's no need for exams. Because we're accustomed to this system of exams and marks and how well do you do. But actually study is not meant for getting any certificates. The study is meant for purification. So although I'm generally encouraging devotees to study these books, once you study them, I'll whip you from the other side and say, now you're studying, don't get puffed up. Because that's a danger also, to think, now I got my degree, now I'm more learned, now I know so much. The Maya catches us, and if we don't study, Maya's got us. If we don't know what Bhagavad Gita is, anyway we're in Maya. That's the transformation. Fat becomes thin, bald becomes hairy, and ignorant. If we don't know what's in Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, then we're ignorant. This is a statement of Rishabdev, that we are defeated in the purpose of human life as long as we do not inquire into what is Atma Tattva, the science of the soul. So if we don't know what is Bhakti Shastra, then we're ignorant fools. And if we do study, but we become proud, then we're still an ignorant fool. It's just that we're a different kind of fool, that's all. That means our learning is superficial. We haven't actually imbibed it. So the real purpose of study is not to pass a test. It's for purification. It's possible to be the first grade Bhakti Shastri, big certificate, and be completely in Maya. That's another way Maya catches us, to think, now I'm very learned. So it's a matter of attitude. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Upadeshamrita, the preface to Upadeshamrita, which is, that preface is... every line and every word is so pregnant with vital understanding. I recommend everyone just read. It's just like 3 pages, something like that. But it's well worth reading again and again. I gave a seminar on that a few years ago in Mayapur. So one of the statements in that preface, Srila Prabhupada writes that advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the performer. So if we take to bhakti study of Shastra with the attitude that let me be purified, let me undertake this as a service, let me for my purification understand who is Krishna and what is my relationship with Krishna, how I should serve Krishna, then that is purifying. If we think that I'm going to pass the exam and become top grade and show everyone, Maya is very subtle, and we may not even recognize that's in our. We may not even recognize that in our subconsciousness, to use modern psychological terms. That's also there in the Vedic psychological analysis, antakaran. There are different terms. So the knowledge, that should have a practical effect in our lives. Another thing to consider, if we think we're very learned, is that no one's very... In the modern age, who's learned? It happens to me fairly regularly that someone introduces me to others as being very learned, and it's just a joke. If we know what the real standard of learning is, then if we've learned enough to know what the standard of learning is, then it's difficult to find anyone in the modern age who's maybe the most learned in people we have in Shastra. They're just like some normal pundit of a few generations ago, because learning was so deep, and it seems people had such capacity previously that the standard of learning was much higher. That's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tatas Chanu Dinam Dharma Satyam Socham Kshamadaya Kalena Balina Rajan Nang Shantayur Balang Smritihi. With the passing of every single day in Kali Yuga, the following become decreased: dharma, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, lifespan, bodily strength, and memory. So memory is one of them. So nowadays, if someone can memorize a few shlokas, people think they're very learned. If we see the Bhakti Shastra course, you can see in this book, Bhakti Siddhant Vaibhav, I gave some sample test papers for the Bhakti, or curriculum for Bhakti Shastra degree. And I think anyone in ISKCON, or all the Gaudiya Math for that matter, at the present time, would, you know, they'd just be completely flummoxed. Do you know that word, flummoxed? It means thrown out, confused, just by looking at it. They'll give a list to explain the meaning of these words, and probably no more than 2% of the members of ISKCON could give the meaning of even 10% of the words there that are given. So the standard of learning, that was just the normal thing for the devotees in the Gaudiya Math in those days and time, but it's less than 100 years ago. So don't, you know, no one should think, well, I'm so learned, I know so much. That's what Brahma thought. That got him in a lot of trouble, didn't it? You remember that? Brahma Vimohana Leela? He thought, well, I know so much, and who's this little boy running around with no shoes on, running after some cows? He's supposed to be God? Huh. Yeah, I know who God is. God's my father. He's Narayana. He knows everything. He imparted knowledge to me. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaviye. And there's this little boy running around. He doesn't even wear any shoes. And he's running around with these cowards, these Vaishyas, not even Brahmins. And eats with his left hand. And, you know, what is this? So he found out. Jananta eva jananta kimba ujaname prabhu manaso. Vapaso vacha vaibhavam tavagocharaha. Later on he prayed to Krishna that someone may say, yeah, I know about Krishna. I know all about Krishna. That's what I thought. That's what I used to think. But now I've come to the conclusion that neither by mental efforts or speaking about it or thinking about it, I can't even begin to understand Krishna. Now, who are we in relation to Lord Brahma? Even one of our heads is not equivalent to one of his brain cells, and he has four heads. So our ability to understand is extremely limited. What do we know? So attitude in devotional service. If we study that, please Krishna, reveal yourself to me in as much as my capacity is there. We pray, we'll find at the beginning of the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada gives the Mangal Acharam, we should pray. We pray to the gurus, to the acharyas, Vandeham Sri Guru Shriyataf Padakamalam Sri Guru Navaishnavamsa. We pray to all the acharyas that may they reveal the knowledge of Bhakti Shastra so that we can appreciate who is Krishna, so that we can serve Krishna. Study is not for self-aggrandizement, but as in Arjuna's case, it should have the practical effect. Just like Arjuna, he was an ignorant soul in Maya, as Srila Prabhupada described him. At least he appeared to be like that. But afterward, he became enriched with not he understood. Previously, he had heard from various sadhus that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. But after hearing Bhagavad Gita, he had a clear idea of who is Krishna, what is this world, what is our duty in this world, how this world works, why the world is running on. What am I, Arjuna, supposed to do? He had a clear understanding of all these points. Previously, it wasn't that he didn't know that Krishna was supreme. As I said, he'd heard that practically from birth, from various sadhus. But he got a very clear idea from Krishna, who summarized all spiritual knowledge. So we should have a very clear idea. Before studying Bhagavad Gita, we may come to Krishna consciousness and we may accept, yes, Krishna is supreme. We don't really know what that is unless we hear from Krishna, from Bhagavad Gita, from Srimad Bhagavatam. What does that mean? What does it mean that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? We may hear, here and there, we may hear from different people and we may have some idea of that, but a systematic understanding, as Krishna imparted to Arjuna, that solidifies our understanding. So this knowledge, what should be the effect of knowledge? Well, in the Upanishads, that's stated, there's Shravana Manana Nididhasana. This process is generally, these terms are generally quoted by the impersonalists, but they're not the properties of the impersonalists. The Shastra is actually the property of the devotees, given by Krishna to the devotees. So Shravana means hearing. Manana means contemplating. And Nididhasana means integrating into our lives. So receiving this knowledge, it's not just a matter of studying, remembering, and regurgitating in an exam, but we should manana, very deeply contemplate it. Knowledge should, this knowledge, the knowledge of kshetra, kshetragya, jnana, the field, the knower of the field, this should make us introspect. There is knowledge about so many things. We can study marine biology, for instance. There are so many fields. That's a broad field in itself. Within that, there are so many sub-disciplines. But that doesn't affect our character in any way. I mean, you can be a marine biologist and be a very good person. You can be a marine biologist and be a very bad person. The knowledge doesn't make any difference to our character per se. But this knowledge, this should purify us. We find in Bhagavad Gita that etaj jnanam iti proktam, this begins with amanidvam adhambidvam, that actually when Krishna speaks of this is knowledge, he actually gives a list of qualities which they are symptomatic of someone who is in knowledge. Krishna doesn't say that one who is a Dvivedi or Chaturvedi, such a person is in knowledge, but he gives a list of qualities which are expected of someone who has knowledge. So this knowledge should make us introspective and consider that how we live our lives, for what purpose we live our lives. We should try to understand Krishna in detail. Krishna explained in some detail to Arjuna that who is he, Krishna, how he is present in everything and yet apart from everything, the mystery of Krishna. So we should internalize this knowledge, and the natural result, so that's one result of receiving this knowledge, is that we internalize it, and it affects our life. Everything we do, we start to see things differently. Instead of seeing the world as a place of that I have to live in and survive in, first thing is to survive, and then on top of that, if I have an opportunity to enjoy anything, all well and good. But the vision of a devotee is how to serve Krishna within this world. Everything is Krishna's. We're living in this world to serve Krishna. Nothing is mine. I am also not mine. I am not a free agent. I am only here to serve. So, this, having received this knowledge, we internalize it, and we also, the natural result of receiving this knowledge is that we want to share it with others. If one's received this knowledge, as Krishna himself says, that one who shares this knowledge with others, broadcasts this knowledge, is very dear to Krishna. So in other words, this knowledge should be, if we've actually received the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, then there should be a transformation. Before and after, there should be a marked difference. It's not just a matter of learning shlokas and being able to repeat them. That's good. We should do that. We should learn shlokas and repeat them. But in our whole life, those who have taken this course, I presume that they were already committed to Krishna consciousness before they took this course. But the commitment should be at a markedly deeper level. If we've actually entered into the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. Just like Arjuna said, Nashto moha smriti labdha, that my illusion is gone. I've regained my proper understanding. Gata sandeha, all my doubts have gone. So having understood Bhagavad Gita as it is, we should be very clear in our understanding of Krishna consciousness. Arjuna was able to say like this because he was able to receive the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. He was selected by Krishna to receive that knowledge because bhaktosi me sakha cheti, he is the right person to receive that knowledge because he's a devotee. Because he's a friend of Krishna. And that knowledge became manifested to Arjuna because he had the attitude, sarvam etadritam manye yang mang vadasi Keshava. O Keshava, Krishna, I accept as a fact, as truth, everything you say to me. So this was Arjuna's attitude. He was prepared to accept Krishna's authority. If we're not prepared to accept Krishna's authority, then our study of Bhagavad Gita is useless or worse. And similarly, if we're not prepared to accept Prabhupada's authority, then better not to just don't make a fuss. Now, some of the things that Krishna said seem to Arjuna to be difficult to understand. But Arjuna, he didn't think, well, I'll give the example. I've given this example many times. That Krishna, at the beginning of what's the fourth chapter, of course, when Krishna was speaking to Arjuna, he didn't say, okay, Arjuna, that's chapter 3, and now for chapter 4. But it was divided in the recitation. We finish this. At the end of the chapter, there's that. How does that go? Anyway, you all know. So, Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastra, Sri Krishna Arjuna Sambhade, Jnana Vijnana Yoga, whatever it is. Which one's that? Saptamadha? Something. So, like that. And then it's Atta Ashtamadhyayaha. So, it's divided like that. But anyway, at the beginning of the fourth chapter, then Krishna says that I gave this knowledge to the sun god, Vivasvan, Imang Vivasvate Proktam, Imang Vivasvate Yogam Proktabana Hamaveyam. Vivasvan, Manave Prahu. That I spoke this to Vivasvan, who spoke it to Manu. And Krishna's going on in this way, Evang Parampara Praptam. And now I'm going to speak to you. And Arjuna interrupts and says, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? How is that possible? You spoke to Vivasvan, who later spoke to Manu, but you're just the same age as me. So how is that possible? That, you know, what are you talking about? I mean, I've known you practically all my life, and everyone knows you're the same age as me, and I'm not so old. Vivasvan is so much older. So what are you talking about? Well, Arjuna didn't ask insolently like that, but he said, katam etad vijaniyam tamado protavaniti. How am I to understand that you spoke this to Vivasvan long ago? How is that possible? Now, to Arjuna, this seemed like a preposterous statement. How could Krishna say that? But at the same time, he understood that Krishna's not an ordinary person, and Krishna's already in two chapters, what we now have as the second chapter and the third chapter, Krishna has spoken to Arjuna such knowledge that Arjuna had not imagined before. Now, Krishna uses words like karma. Krishna and Arjuna use words like karma, dharma, atma, jnana. I mean, obviously, Arjuna, he already had some conceptualization of these terms. I mean, Krishna didn't start speaking to Arjuna absolutely ABC. He used various terms. Brahma, this word is already there. Nirvana, these are all these. So these are terms used in philosophical, metaphysical discussions. So obviously Arjuna, he already had some idea of what these terms were and their implications, but the way Krishna explained it made everything clear to Arjuna, just like we find there are so many Hindus today, maybe not so many, definitely with each generation. Tatashchanu dinam dharma nangshanti. With every day things are getting worse. But still today there are many Hindus, and probably every Hindu knows the word dharma, bhakti, yoga. In fact, even in America nowadays, there are many people who know these words. These specific words, dharma, bhakti, yoga, they've entered the English language through Prabhupada and various New Age cheaters who pass as gurus. It's not a joke. I'm not joking. It's just a statement of fact. So, Arjuna had already received such knowledge from Krishna. He realized that even before he approached Krishna, even before he surrendered to Krishna, the that shishyasteyang shadimang tong prapannam, that he surrendered as a disciple. He understood Krishna is not an ordinary person. So when Krishna said that, it's just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that critics will say, what is this? You know, Brahma with four heads, and then he got angry and a child popped out of between his eyebrows. And there are so many fantastic sounding statements. We'll find such statements then, but which to Monier Williams and other Indologists who were studying the Shastra with the specific aim of attempting to rubbish them, to them these statements may seem just like nonsensical. But then we find in Srimad Bhagavatam description of time from the atom, a highly sophisticated system of calculation of time based on understanding that's only recently in the modern Western scientific community, only recently means little over 100 years ago, is the principle of the understanding of time being calculated from, more than 100 years, but time is calculated from movement of bodies from the smallest up to the largest. So that's in Srimad Bhagavatam, and a system of, nowadays they talk about the Big Bang, everything came from nothing, but it's not exactly nothing. If we study in Srimad Bhagavatam, if we say everything comes from nothing, it's just preposterous, but Srimad Bhagavatam describes that prior to the cosmic manifestation there is Pradhan, which is not exactly nothing, but it's everything is there but unmanifest. So the idea that everything came from nothing, it's nonsensical, but it may appear so scientifically, but then Srimad Bhagavatam describes that it comes from the unmanifest, they say the primordial soup or whatever. But there's primordial matter in the unmanifest state, which might seem like nothing, but it's potential matter. The pradhan is potential matter. So this is, scientifically, the Srimad Bhagavatam has got so much to offer. I mean, you could even take that as a scientific theory and say that there wasn't nothing, there was potential matter. So anyway, I'm just making the point that Vyasadeva, he's not such a fool that this Lewis Carroll was, you all know Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland. He's famous for Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, children's stories. But actually, he was a professor of mathematics at Oxford University. And he made some significant contributions in the field of mathematics, which is recognized by mathematicians even today, students of the history of mathematics. So maybe in between his mathematical studies, he was a good mathematician, he spun some fairy stories. But Vyasadeva wasn't like that. It wasn't that he was writing some science and in between he started making some fairy stories, like Lewis Carroll, to entertain his friend's daughter or something like this. So in the same way, Krishna, it's not that he's talking the principles of spiritual knowledge and all of a sudden he has some kind of epileptic fit and starts talking all nonsense. So Arjuna can recognize that. Some schizophrenia, all of us. He's talking all this highly relevant metaphysical understanding, and all of a sudden he says, oh, and by the way, I spoke this to Vivaswan. You might say, there are some people like that, they're very intelligent, but if they don't take certain drugs, then they'll just start talking all nonsense. I know one devotee who's actually he's a scientist by background. But if he doesn't take his drugs, he'll tell you, actually the invasion from outer space has already begun and all this kind of thing. He just talks nonsense. So Krishna wasn't like that, and Arjuna recognized that. But it might have sounded preposterous to Arjuna that Krishna had spoken this knowledge to Vivasva. But he didn't say, well, come on, Krishna, come on. Let's get back to the good stuff. You know, just forget about that and let's get back to the instruction you were given. That's pretty good. But Arjuna recognized that Krishna had something serious. He wasn't wasting time. There was very little time they had to speak some nonsense. So Arjuna asked Krishna, Katame tad vijaniyam tvam ado proktavaniti. How am I to understand that you spoke this so long ago to Vivasvam, when you and I are the same age and we're both very young compared to Vivasvam? So the point here is that Arjuna accepted that I don't understand, it sounds wrong to me, but Krishna, he's on a different platform to me, he's on a completely different and higher level of understanding that I'm trying to come to. But because of my limitations and my conditioning, I don't understand what he's saying. But obviously he knows something which is at the present time far beyond my platform of understanding. So instead of Arjuna rejecting Krishna and saying this can't be right, Arjuna submissively asked Krishna that how am I to understand what you are saying is correct? Now this is very important. I've elaborated this point somewhat because it's a very serious disease of doubt and mayavad has been introduced into our movement through various demoniac ideas, which have, just like you might have a healthy person who carries some very dangerous germs which can kill many people. It is at the biological level. So in the same way we find sometimes devotees who are in other ways practicing Krishna consciousness, but they carry some demoniac ideas which can completely poison the whole Krishna conscious understanding of everybody who comes in contact with them. And they may not even, just like with a disease, you often can't recognize it until it's practically killed you. That happens. Diseases of the immune system or cancer, you might not even understand you have it until it's so much developed that you're already practically hopeless of recovery. So in the same way, the idea that, well, Prabhupada said some things which we accept and other things we can't accept. Or just a couple of days ago, I got an email from a disciple of mine who's distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in America. He travels around and they distribute a lot of books to young people, university students like this. So in their travels around the vast country of America, I mean, it's a tiny spot on a tiny planet, but relatively speaking, it's much bigger even than India in size. So on his travels, he meets people who he's given books to, and he often asks them, well, they say, oh, I met you 2 years ago in somewhere else, and you gave me a book, and he said, well, did you read it? And about this, they just read a lot of Bhagavad Gita, as it is. So he told me a lot of people will reply that, and now I was too lazy to read it. They'll openly say I was too lazy. Or they may, another common response is that, well, I read the translations only, but not the commentary, because I don't want anyone telling me it's how to understand it. I'll understand it in my own way. Such arrogance to think that Srila Prabhupada, who's a pure devotee of Krishna, even from the material point of view, or from external understanding, Srila Prabhupada has spent his whole life studying this. And dedicated his life, he was completely absorbed in this subject. And someone who doesn't know anything about it thinks that they can understand it better than Prabhupada. And it's just preposterous, but this is the kind of foolishness that goes on in the name of spiritual understanding in the modern age. That everyone has their own truth, which they have to find out by themselves. So, this idea that, or if you do read it, I like this idea. Yeah, okay, that's quite good. And that one, I don't like that idea. This is quite good. That isn't good. Yeah, Prabhupada got it right there. I think Prabhupada, what he says here is quite good. Yeah, I'll give him a pat on the back for that one. And this, no, he got it wrong. Specifically I'm saying because it's always a point of contention, a controversial point, and people might get fed up with me hearing this, but I often say it, and people think I'm a woman hater for saying it, but Srila Prabhupada writes several times, as is written in Shastra itself, it's not Prabhupada's own idea, that women are less intelligent than men, and there are similar statements which in the modern age are considered denigrating to women, sexist, and, Prabhupada just got it wrong. I mean, everyone knows that, I'm quoting what other people are saying. I'm not saying Prabhupada's wrong. It'd kill me if I say that. It'd strangle me. Better, please. The idea that women have been mistreated throughout the whole of history, and now we got it right. Our whole society, man has developed from the apes, and then they came up in Africa, and some went to India, and some who went to west to the Europe, they became more developed. They got white skin, and they became the most intelligent people. And in America and maybe England, that's the summit of human evolution, Our society and our way of understanding is better than anything that has ever been before, and we got it right. You see, we're fair to everyone. Of course, we commercially exploit the rest of the world, but we got it right, and equal rights for everyone. Everyone's all equal, and women have been exploited, and now we give them equal opportunity, so that they can also work in factories, and we'll also send them to the war in Iraq, just to show that, we're not doing a war in Iraq anymore. We're just there, but we're not really having a war anymore. We give them equal opportunity to have bullets shot at them, because we think that women should have equal rights. And they think that it's a much better culture, although the idea of protecting women and not sending them to war sounds a lot better to me. There's this arrogance that our society, we've understood things so much better, whereas the whole society is such a complete mess. The people are totally confused, and people have to go to, if they can afford it, they go to psychiatrists. If they don't, they just, beat up their wife or beat up their husband or beat up their dog or something like this. Get drunk. Friend now means someone you meet on Facebook. This is modern society. Or you can hire a friend. They have now, you can now hire a friend. It's a new thing. So the idea that they got it right, and Prabhupada, he's from the past, he doesn't understand, he got it all wrong. This is complete arrogance. And the idea that that we're studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, this is my point. It's not that I'm on, as is, I hope, erroneously thought, that I'm on an anti-woman trip. But that this particular point has been, it's so pervasive in modern society that women, they should have equal rights. But as Prabhupada often said, there's no question of equal rights, because if there's equal rights, then the men should have babies also. But the bodies have been designed differently. I mean, it's just an obvious thing that the bodies and the psychological constitution that go with it are different. And the idea to try to make it all the same is just bizarre and absurd. So there are certain statements in Srila Prabhupada's books which are considered to be sexist. By this term has been invented by people who discriminate against women and say that, well, why shouldn't they also be shot, you know, be sent to Iraq and get shot at like everyone else? They should have an equal right. Oh, actually, I just met a devotee who came back from Afghanistan, and he was in the American army there, and he was in the airborne division, that means the parachute troops. So I said, well, how do the women do it? He said, we don't have women in there. We don't have women. It's too heavy for them. They can't carry the parachute pack. They just get killed. It's just hopeless to put women in. So anyway, it just goes to prove a point. Anyway, the idea that Srila Prabhupada has made some mistake by saying that, then we can't understand anything, we have not understood Bhagavad Gita as it is. We haven't understood what it means to be a disciple. If we can't, just like Arjuna, when he heard Krishna say that, I spoke to Vivasvan, Krishna said. Arjuna said, well, how is that? How am I to understand that? He didn't say you're wrong. It might have been very difficult for Arjuna to understand it, but he understood that I can't understand it because of my limitation. So in the same way, if we find it very difficult to understand, which is understandable considering all the bogus propaganda that goes on in modern society, that life is so much better now, now we can live in air-conditioned rooms, although if you didn't have to live in this miserable place in the desert, you wouldn't even have to have air conditioning. If you just stayed at home and people had lived life the way that they'd done previously, they didn't have air conditioning and they didn't have such extreme heat, or they'd have buildings which were built to withstand the heat, and people would just tolerate and have a hand fan like this, and they'd go on with life. So the whole idea that modern life is so much better and we have to give our sons and our daughters a career and they have to stand on their own two feet, blah, 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 all this rubbish. If we don't understand by opening our eyes or hearing from Srila Prabhupada that modern society is a complete mess, if we think that, well, I'll do a little, I'm a Hindu, so it's nice if I chant Hare Krishna, that's good, I'll become a good Hindu. But I also have to send my children for education to America, and they should get first class degrees and careers. And if we don't understand if we don't accept what Srila Prabhupada's saying, or if we're not prepared to accept what he says, then we can never understand, even if we pass our Bhakti Shastri degree. It's meaningless. We have to accept as Arjuna accepted. Sarvam etadritam manye yam mam vadasi keshava. Whatever you say to me, Krishna, I accept as completely true. Arjuna, it took some time for him to understand. He didn't understand immediately. Krishna didn't say, Arjuna, you just accept what I say, otherwise I'll throw you into hell forever, which is what we hear from the Abrahamic religions. That's Judaism, is Christianity, and Islam. They just say, "Well, you believe what we say, otherwise we'll throw you into hell forever." You don't have to understand what we say. You just have to believe it. You just have to open your mouth and say that I believe in Jesus. Okay, you're saved. What does it mean to believe in Jesus? With no idea whatsoever, but you just have to say it. Otherwise, the all-merciful God will throw you into hell and burn you forever. And don't question it. So Krishna, he's not like that with Arjuna. Krishna explains to Arjuna. He takes the trouble to explain. Arjuna has doubts. Krishna's ready to explain it. But at the same time, Arjuna, there has to be some level of acceptance. It's not that we think that, well, Prabhupada, okay, he was a nice old man and he got some things right, but well, you know, he was a bit out of touch with the modern world. Oh, here's another good one. Oh, what Prabhupada said was okay, but that was, after all, that was 30 years ago, and now the world's changed. Really? Has it really changed that much? That what Prabhupada said has become so irrelevant? So in these ways, in various ways in which people are they superficially, just like the Mayavadis, they superficially show respect to Krishna. Yes, Krishna is a great philosopher. He is the representative of the unmanifest. And in this way, they show great respect. But it's actually blasphemy of Krishna. So in the same way, yes, Prabhupada had some good ideas, and I really agree with a lot of things he says. But you know, some of the things he got wrong. This kind of understanding is not understanding at all. Anyone who thinks like this should, it would be a lot better. It won't happen, unfortunately, but it would be a lot better that rather than teaching such things, that everyone can have their own opinion, understand Prabhupada in your own way, which is all Mayavad, just your own opinion, jato mat tato pat, just any opinion's as good as any other. Or as Krishna says, as Prabhupada says, that if we to accept Bhagavad Gita, then we have to accept Krishna's authority. Otherwise, why do these people take Bhagavad Gita at all? Just write your own book. Instead of interpreting Krishna, because people accept, people think that what Bhagavad Gita is famous, so let me take Bhagavad Gita. If I write my own book, no one will be interested. But if I put Bhagavad Gita and then put my own nonsense, then people will take it seriously. So in the same way, if we take Bhagavad Gita as it is, and Prabhupada says this, and Prabhupada, okay, I'm teaching Bhagavad Gita, now I'm going to give a lecture on Bhagavad Gita as it is, and Prabhupada says this, but actually, well, anyway, we need to reinterpret this, or rethink it, or change it, or, and then it's the same thing. Then why take Bhagavad Gita as it is? If we're not prepared to accept what Prabhupada says, then we become like the Mayavadi demons who superficially give respect, but at the same time they have their own idea, which is completely different. And in the same way, so in this way, while superficially giving respect to Krishna or Prabhupada, they're actually criticizing him by saying that actually he doesn't really know what he's talking about. And here I am to explain better what Prabhupada got wrong or what Krishna got wrong. So it's actually very offensive. So if we don't come out of this Bhakti Shastra course with a complete conviction that everything Krishna says is completely correct and everything that Prabhupada says is completely correct, then it's worse than useless. It becomes like just that example is given of the jewel on the hood of a snake. It looks very attractive, but it's very dangerous because we think, oh, that's good, let me take it. And then immediately the snake will bite us and kill us. So it may seem that someone's very learned. I've learned so much. But if by their learning they think they know better than Krishna and better than Prabhupada, then they just become, they become a more dangerous demon. Because it appears as if they're representing Krishna and Prabhupada. So in this way we should accept. Not blindly. If we don't understand all these points, it may be difficult to understand, that's accepted. But then we should try, instead of saying, well, I can't accept that, Prabhupada got it wrong, This extremely arrogant attitude, even to have this attitude, then we shouldn't even be sitting in a Bhakti Shastra course at all. We're not fit even to begin. We should have some pre-training before we go into it. And then if we don't understand, then we should inquire with the attitude that I don't understand because I'm a fool, I'm in Maya, I need to be trained. I need to be told what is correct. And we have to be prepared to accept that. Again, not blindly. Arjuna again and again asked, and eventually he became satisfied. So, same point, whatever it may be. If we find it difficult to understand, then We should inquire and try to understand, but not think that I know better. At some point, of course, we can't understand everything. Just like the structure of the universe is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, we may not. You have to be probably an engineer or a cosmologist to even understand the concept of that. But even to conceptually understand that, it's difficult even to figure it out in our minds how it all works. But the basic point of that we should accept it. Once I was, a few years ago, I was visiting the Purna Pragya Vidyapitam in Bangalore, which is the school of the Madhva Sampradaya, a major school of the Madhva Sampradaya. So I can't remember what I went there. I went there for something or other. So I spoke with some of the pandits there in English. They wanted to speak with me in Sanskrit, but Murkosmi Sanskrit na janami. That's all I could say in Sanskrit. So anyway, I discussed with them something or other. Then they asked me some question. They said, well, you're preaching in various places, and what do you say to people who question the Bhagavatam's description of the Jagat, the cosmology of the Bhagavatam? And I say to them, I told them, well, we just accept what Vyasadeva says. This is our methodology. You have your methodology of like ants sitting on a table. They have extremely limited senses, extremely limited intelligence, and with that, sitting in a tiny planet on a tiny speck in a huge galaxy in a massive cosmos, they want to try and understand what's going on. So that's their methodology, and we have our methodology. And by this methodology, for centuries, even before the Western astronomers could even imagine such things, the Vedic astronomers were predicting the occurrence of eclipses. They had a highly sophisticated science of mathematics and geometry, which was used not only in astronomy but for making the Yajnashala. They had an extremely sophisticated system of geometry. So we have our methodology, which hasn't changed over all these centuries. Their so-called science is changing all the time. We'll stick with Vyasadeva. It's a different methodology, and those who want, they can accept it, and those who don't, they can become a scientist and have Jato scientist, Toto Mot. It's, you know, they all have their own different opinions. They don't know what's going on. So, and they were satisfied with that reply. So we should try to understand what it means to become a disciple. It's very difficult in the modern age where this education makes people puffed up and they think they know so much. They've amassed masses of ignorance in their minds which gives them some material qualification. But it's all layer on layer of ignorance. And real knowledge begins amanitvam adhambitvam. When we give up this puffed up idea that we can know anything by our own material extrospection, if there is any such term. The materialistic demeanor cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. That is the beginning of understanding, as Srila Prabhupada said, is to stand under and stop thinking that we know so much and we're so intelligent, and to accept that we are controlled, there is a controller, we are subordinate to him, and he's kind enough to communicate to us through Shastra and through his representatives. So if there are some statements that we find difficult to understand, we should understand that it's our incapacity, our limitedness that we don't understand, and not reject the teachings of the Shastra and the Acharyas. We should give up this offensive attitude. Otherwise we cannot even begin to advance in spiritual knowledge. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there.